Radio Times.
You is kind, you is smart, you is important. You is smart, you is kind, you is important. That's so good.
That's Viola Davis as Abilene from the movie The Help. She works as a maid for a white family, and in this scene, she's talking with their little girl. The movie, based on the novel of the same name, is set in segregated Jackson, Mississippi in the early 1960s. A young white female reporter decides to interview Abilene and other domestics to tell their story and to expose the racism of that time. Viola Davis is nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress. Octavia Spencer, who plays another maid named Minnie, and Jessica Chastain, who plays a ditzy, good-natured housewife, are both nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and The Help is up for Best Picture. While the performances have been praised, the film has been criticized for reinforcing racial stereotypes, and Hollywood has come under fire once again for the limited roles offered to African Americans. That's our topic for today's Radio Times, and we have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. John L. Jackson is the Richard Perry University Professor of Communication and Anthropology at the University of Pennsylvania, author of several books, including Racial Paranoia. And John Jackson, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Tanya Hamilton. She's a writer, producer, director, and her debut feature film, Night Catches Us, was released to critical acclaim in 2010. It earned nominations at the Independent Spirit Awards, the NAACP Image Awards, and won several Black Reel Awards, including Best Film. And she was a guest on Radio Times talking about Night Catches Us. And Tanya Hamilton, nice to have you with us back on Radio Times as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Mark Rosenthal. He's a voting member of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. He's a screenwriter of such films as Mona Lisa Smile, Superman 4, Star Trek 6, Planet of the Apes. Also an assistant professor of film media arts at Temple University. And Mark Rosenthal, nice to have you back with us
nice
on Radio Times
back
as well. And to our listeners, lines open. We want to know what you make of this film, The Help. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Your assignment was to go see The Help, and I want to get a response from each of you. And John, I'll start with you. What did you make of the movie, The Help?
Well, in some ways, I feel like the film is typical Hollywood. Part of what I was taught as an undergraduate filmmaker, I studied film in D.C. at Howard University with Haile Garima, and he kept stressing the fact that Hollywood, the only way they can make movies with a diverse cast is if the point of entry, quote-unquote, is a white character. Because he argued white America, or at least Hollywood can't trust white America to identify with African-American characters as main subjects. And so I feel like part of what The Help reinforces is an assumption that the only way to tell stories about race in America, about conflict and difference across racial lines, is to allow white characters to be our guides, to shepherd us through, and to segregate and isolate black characters into these seemingly one-dimensional and menial roles. And there's nothing about that I think that's intrinsically bad in and of itself. The issue is there aren't other options, right? There aren't other characters these people can play that show the complexity of black life.
Now, I don't know when you were in school, but you're talking about something that you were taught as a younger person, but still true today.
I think it's still accurate. I think filmmakers still know that's the way you make movies.
What did you make of The Help, Tanya?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I agree with John, and I think that maybe I would add that it was sort of a throwback movie, and in that, you know, so many of the films in the 80s, you know, I remember the film about Steven Biko, for instance, you know, so this idea of the entry point needing to be a white American, and I think that, so I thought that was sort of interesting, that, that it felt so kind of out of its time politically. And then I think also probably something that felt unfortunate, I think, is that while the characters, you know, had this entry point and that was sort of their, you know, sort of how we were supposed to relate to them, I still kind of felt like I wanted to see these women as really rounded people. And I think it's interesting in a way that, that they don't have spouses,
mm-hmm.
they don't have children,
mm-hmm.
they don't have, so that I think that in a way the film could have succeeded politically, even with its limited vantage point, by kind of really making these characters a lot more well-rounded and to that they were allowed a real life.
And I want to pick up on all of that, but Mark, let me get you in on the conversation, your overall response to The Help.
I would say fun and cringy.
fun and cringy.
So, look, normally I would say that it's not the burden of every film to completely carry the history of all of its topics, but I think we have to look at The Help in the context of what's going on in the United States today. We have this very roly-poly governor in New Jersey who decided to tell us that the way to that the South should have handled blacks being kept from the voting polls was to put it to a vote. And then we have the other roly-poly ex-Republican governor of Mississippi saying that the white citizens' councils are actually these peacemakers down there, sort of in tie-dyed hoods. So I think that normally I would let The Help go as just kind of a great showcase for some really wonderful actresses, but I think the problem with the movie is the Emma Stone character. If I could just...
And she's the young reporter.
The young woman who supposedly is telling these people that they are really exploited and should do something about it, as if that has ever been the case. Patricia Turner, who's a professor at UC Davis, wrote a wonderful op-ed piece in The Times, and what she said essentially is that the white citizens' councils, which were the thinking man's Ku Klux Klan, were made up of white middle-class people whose company we would enjoy. Hmm. And that is the issue. It's not the scene-stealing, racist Bryce Dallas Howard character with the commodes on her front lawn. It's the fact that normal, good people who you would enjoy for dinner turned their back when the churches were being blown up. And that kind of historiography, I think, is what upsets me about this.
But that's a different movie.
It might be a different movie, but it's the fact that it's not that the Emma Stones of that time did not do what they did in the film. And that's really the political issue.
Well, I want to play, and Viola Davis has had to, in a sense, defend her portrayal of a maid. And I want to play just an excerpt from an interview she actually did on Fresh Air recently. In fact, it was last week. Viola Davis telling Terry Gross that she did not feel the role of Abilene was beneath her, and she didn't see the character as a stereotype. Let's listen to what she says.
I did not see that with Abilene. I saw her going on a journey. I saw her having humor and heart and intelligence. I saw her as being having duality, and that's what I look for above anything else, because usually that is what's missing. It's beyond the occupation.
Well, John, let me go back to you. And she has been criticized, not by everybody, but by some, for playing a maid. And we should say it's a movie about maids in many ways. Another actress up for an Oscar. Is that a troubling role for a black actress to play?
I think she shouldn't be forced to justify the idea that she wants to try to humanize this character. There were maids who were black in the South at the time. I think the key, though, is if we imagine Viola Davis to be relegated to these kinds of roles exclusively, that's the issue. And I think we're talking about a context where actors don't have a lot of flexibility to begin with. No one does, right? So it's not just black women who are sort of, in some ways trapped in these prefab boxes. But there's a way in which, even if we imagine she's done her best to create as three-dimensional a character she can with the material she's been given, right, the point is she shouldn't just be designated those kinds of portrayals. And we have to think about black womanhood and the kind of the life of the country in these much more eclectic ways. And that's the issue. It's not that she played this role. It's that she should get a different kind of role next time. And Hollywood doesn't seem to have the guts to do that kind of thing for black actresses.
Tanya, let me quote something that she said on Tavis Smiley's show. And Tavis said to her, "I want you to win, but I'm ambivalent about what you're winning for." Obviously winning for Best Actress. And I'm just quoting here actually from the New York Times. And she said, "That very mindset that you have and that a lot of African Americans have is absolutely destroying the black artist. You're a movie maker. You made a fabulous movie, Night Catches Up Us, about a Black Panther who comes home. Do you think there's some truth to that?"
I mean, I think that I guess I fundamentally believe that if you can harness the sort of the naturalism of sort of the lives that we all lead, then I think it almost in a way kind of gives you a pass. That I appreciate the idea that she plays this role. I agree very much with John. I don't think it's about playing a maid. I think that it's about playing a character that is well-rounded and complicated, and that I think is what is absent. And it's, if I can speak specifically for, sure, African American cinema, that complexity feels very absent to me on all ends. And so that's a beautiful thing. I go back again to the idea that I think that the filmmakers had a way here to get out of the situation that the film sort of ends up in, which is that these characters are not well-rounded. They are sort of in that Abilene is a woman who is contending, you know, with the circumstances that life has dealt her, and but I never see the son, for instance, that she talks about. The son who died, right. I mean, if I had seen those scenes, you know, even just one scene, or if she and the preacher, you know, had fallen in love, or, you know, who's, you know, the smaller character that's in the film, or the guy who's the soda jerk, or if I had seen the Octavia, you know, character, if I had seen her, you know, with the only time I get an inkling of the roundness of her life is that she has this man who beats her. I think that it's not the lack of roles necessarily, though I think that that's a big part of it. I think it's also the complexity of those roles. There's such a narrowness in a way in how, as people of color, you know, we both portray ourselves and are allowed to be portrayed. And I think, you know, so I think if they had just done that, I would have been able to really get into this film a lot more.
Mark, let me get you back in on the conversation. I saw the film, and I see the stereotypes that you're talking about. I also see the white women, frankly, as a stereotype. I mean, they were completely, with one or two exceptions, unlikable, shallow, self-involved. Mm-hmm. They were terrible parents. They were in the junior league. They seemed to do nothing all day long. I mean,
but again, this is in a film that is a melodrama in the most classic sense of it. It is really just, if you think about it, it's a composite of separate scenes that don't hang together really with a very strong idea. We have the chocolate pie, we have the commodes on the front lawn, we have a little bit of drama, then we have the bizarre scene of Jessica Chastain, you know, cooking that meal for Octavia Spencer, as if that would ever have happened.
Yes.
But it also is the movie on the Best Picture list that made the most money. And I think that would sometimes, when I was first starting out in the business, I was working for a guy named Mark Rydell when he was doing A Golden Pond, and he told me one thing. He said, the audience is always right. And if there's a hit, your job is to go and find out why it's a hit. And I have this theory, which you can eviscerate me for. But
and we might.
And apropos of listening to your first segment, I think there is so much racism bubbling through the country now in the body politic that if you listen to the relentless onslaught against Obama, he's a Kenyan, he's a this, he's a terrorist, he's a Muslim, as if that's something you would accuse someone of. That even in its misguided liberal way, there was a movie for a second that seemed like maybe there's some hope, you know, among people. And even in those manipulations of stereotypes. And I think that's why I found an audience. Mm-hmm. So for the wrong reasons, they went to the right place.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the movie The Help, and it's nominated for 4 Academy Awards. The Academy Awards are Sunday night. Our guests are Mark Rosenthal, Tanya Hamilton, and John L. Jackson Jr. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What did you make of the movie? Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Ten Thousand Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY. Their annual rug event ends this Saturday, featuring the Fair Trade Bunyad Rug Collection of over 1,500 hand-knotted rugs. Online at rugs.10thousandvillages.com.
Peanuts. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, I'll reveal what it takes to produce a crop of these unusual legumes. Plus, forcing spring bulbs to bloom at your command, and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
Arizona hosts the final GOP presidential debate before Super Tuesday. Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney are battling for the lead to win their party's nomination, but Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul haven't thrown in the towel. Who is making moves and who's stuck in a rut? We'll bring you up to date next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
The Discover Newsworks Facebook Sweepstakes. This week, tickets to see 2 upcoming concerts at Union Transfer. You must like newsworks.org on Facebook to enter. No purchase necessary. For a complete list of rules, go to newsworks.org. Smart. Local. News.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with University Professor John L. Jackson, filmmaker Tanya Hamilton, and screenwriter Mark Rosenthal about the film The Help. It has received 4 Oscar nominations, and it has also generated a fair amount of discussion and even controversy about some of the racial stereotypes in the movie, some historical inaccuracies, and raising once again questions about the kind of roles that African Americans get in a Hollywood film. Let me play another scene from The Help. In this scene, Minnie storms into Abilene's kitchen and confronts Abilene and Skeeter. Skeeter's the young white woman who wants to write this book after learning that they are working on a book about maids. Let's listen.
And just what makes you think colored people need your help? Why do you care, Minnie? Maybe you just want to get Abilene in trouble.
No. I want to show her perspective. So people might understand what it's like from your side.
Well, it's a real 4th of July picnic. It's what we dream of doing all weekend long. Get back into their house, polish the silver. And we just love not making minimum wage or getting the Social Security. And how we love they cheering when they little. And then they turn out just like they mamas.
I know. So maybe things can change.
What law's gonna say you got to be nice to your maid?
You don't have to do this now, Minnie.
You damn right I don't. You two give me heart palpitations.
And that's Octavia Spencer up for an Oscar on Sunday night as Minnie, and that's a scene from The Help. And John, going back to you, I mean, she's really giving Skeeter a good dressing down.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I feel like the artist's job is virtuosity, is to be good at what you're asked to do. And I think the performances in this piece are often riveting and really moving. They're powerful, and that's why I think the film also resonates, because there's a way in which, even if you might imagine that a lot of what they're doing is reinforcing stereotypes and creating these sort of false senses of agency that these black women do and don't really have, the performances themselves still find a way to give them a kind of humanity I think everyone can recognize.
You know, Tanya, I'm wondering, and this film goes back to the 1960s, it's fictional, but nonetheless, I'm wondering whether people that might be in their 20s or maybe even in their 30s might not know that, you know, black maids could not use the bathroom in a white person's house. I mean, I wonder if there is buried in all of this a little bit of a history lesson.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I didn't actually, I mean, it makes sense to me, but I liked the bathroom line a lot. I mean, I thought that that was, you know, sort of a fun, you know, piece to follow. I mean, I think that, you know, I think that there are pieces of this that felt earnest, and that felt like the filmmakers were really trying to kind of give us, you know, to give us some sort of context in a way of the times that these people lived in. I think, unfortunately, it gets so overshadowed, even the great performances, because I agree, I think the performances are beautiful. But I think that so much of the film falls into caricature that you kind of lose a little bit of the nuance and of the things that, like the bathroom. You know, there's a beautiful moment in the film that I really, I wanted so much to have more of this. Of, you know, when Medgar Evers is murdered, you know, there's that scene where she's running home. You know, everybody's got to get off the street. And I love that when she's running across the lawn and she falls. And I just thought visually it was really beautiful. I thought they had woven in the idea of history, you know, into the narrative. I liked that a lot. And I wished for more context, you know, from the perspective, in a way, of these characters. I mean, I thought that, you know, I really loved seeing that.
Mark, I want to get you back in, then we'll get to some callers. Looks like we have a full bank of calls. But we're talking, in this case, it's a white director. It's also the woman that wrote the book, The Help.
And she selected the director.
And she selected. Apparently, they both grew up in this town, knew each other. Does that make a difference, that it's a white director
film? It's this notion of how much burden are we going to put on any one work of art to carry the truth. I think, though, once you stake out your subject matter, sometimes that is a burden. But this movie is really just operating on the level of melodrama. It is not nuanced. It's not a great work of art, but it's often moving, and if it's often fun, And it's really the great acting that carries it through, moment by moment, you know, for across the board. And part of me feels really terrible that poor Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer have to go through this. We don't make Bruce Willis justify his films. Uh-huh. And here she is, you know, right now they should be drinking champagne and getting their, you know, Versace gowns. And they are so defensive, and it's so hard to have an acting career and to keep it going. And I feel this, you know, thing. I just want to give them both hugs. And I voted for them just, you know, because of what they've had to go through.
Sure, and clearly their performances are Oscar quality. But, John, that raises the question about whether a black actor or even a minority actor, when they take a role, they're representing, you know, their race. White people don't, you know, you can be a serial murderer. You can be all sorts of things. And no one says, well, that's white people for you.
That's exactly right. And I think until we get to the point where Hollywood, I do feel like the sort of television serial, which has been elevated at least by HBO and Showtime to almost the level of a work of art, can allow us some more flexibility to have diverse characters. But until Hollywood ever feels like they have the courage to bank films that allow us to see different kinds of minority characters, I think we have actors trapped in this really tight box. And so they're going to have to answer, because Burt Williams had this history, because of Stepan Fetcher, because of the overdetermined past that says, we've seen this all before, right? This isn't new. And I think there's a sort of a danger in imagining we can get history lessons at all from these films, right? Yeah. Because there's this blurring between fact and fiction. So what do we take as being accurate and what's not accurate? In some ways, we throw up our hands. We just take it all in.
Well, Tanya, going back to when Hattie McDaniel got an Oscar for her portrayal of Mammy in Gone with the Wind, are we talking about, you know, 21st century mammies when we're talking about these two characters, these two roles?
I think that's a tough question for me to answer. I mean, I think that these women have earned what they're going to get, what they earned their nominations. I think that they will, if they win their awards, they will have earned it. I mean, they're lovely actors. And so, you know, I think the thing is that there's a complexity in a way, I think, about how people of color are often kind of rewarded for roles that are maybe not as dignified, you know, as they should be.
Are you thinking about Halle Berry?
Thinking about a lot of, yeah. I mean, and so I think, you know, it's unfortunate because it shouldn't take anything away from these people. I mean, they're really hardworking, and I agree. I think it must be really difficult to be an actor. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that they have absolutely earned it, but I think that, we live in a world where politics is very important, and I think that because there are so few films, you know, that are on the scale of a movie like this, because I think there's actually an incredible, beautiful kind of black film revolution going on at the moment. There are a lot of indie films that are being made that are, you know, of mm-hmm. people of color all over. But just on this level, you know, where it can get this kind of recognition, I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that it's such a narrow perspective.
Well, we are talking about the film The Help, and that's filmmaker Tanya Hamilton joining us along with screenwriter Mark Rosenthal and, can I say, anthropologist? Okay, sorry. I should have asked you that before the show began. Also, John L. Jackson, Jr., and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We want to hear from you what you make of this film and the things that we've been talking about. Let's see what Reggie from Gladwin has to say. And Reggie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great show.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I myself think that the actors shouldn't feel any heat because they did a great job. They're actors, you know, and we know the dynamics that they have to deal with. What I see in this is that, you know, the films like this to me are like a vestige of like slavery and Jim Crow, because it's about context, and you know, the majority population seems to, you know, only be able to put black folks in a certain context. So as an Israeli friend of mine once told me, as I sort of complained to him, I'm a little burnt out about films about the Holocaust and so on. This was around the time of Schindler's List. And he told me something that resonated. He said, hey, if you want to have your story out there, you're going to have to put it out there. No one's going to do that for you. And I took that to heart, and I think he's right. I just want to hear some feedback.
Well, Tanya, since you're a filmmaker, let me toss that back to you.
I mean, I think that I think it's important that if you can find a way to empower yourself to make, you know, your own story in whatever you know, sort of whatever vessel, whether you're a writer or whether you write children's books or, you know, you make movies. So, you know, I think that I do very much believe that at the moment, especially, I think that there are so many people who have found a way to make movies and that the films are about the minutia of, you know, whether it's the African-American experience or, you know, the experience of being someone who lives in poverty or, you know, so I think that in my mind, again, I think what is harder in the film business is to not necessarily make a movie, though that's incredibly hard.
Sure.
But it's to make a movie that actually is seen and that people can experience and that people can learn from. And I think the power of film is that it is this medium where you can kind of bring in all different kinds of people from everywhere. That to me, that's the great success, if you can find a film that's both big and small at the same time. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I think that that's what has to be done.
Go ahead, Mark. Okay. I mean, you in a sense work in
here's the thing.
Hollywood.
We are actually living in this huge transitional phase. Studios do not want to make dramas anymore. There's no money in it for them. But we're also living in a time when studios and movie theaters and how we take our movies is all changing. And I think that the growth of the indies and cables and festivals and the merger with the internet is going to eventually allow young black filmmakers to start making movies and have the same distribution. But this is really, we're in the last gasp of this way of seeing movies. And Hollywood doesn't want to make any dramas.
Well, let me segue over to you, John. The Wire, I think, is the best thing that's ever been on television, and that it was certainly told many stories from many perspectives and was very diverse. There's a show that I really like called Southland, which is also about cops. And it's, again, a very diverse culture. I wonder whether TV is ahead of Hollywood.
I still love watching feature films, but anytime I see a really good one, I saw Pariah not too long ago, Night Catchers. Anytime I see a film that goes, wow, this is powerful, I go, this would be an even better miniseries or even better series. And I do think, because part of what it allows us to do is it allows us to really see characters develop over time, not these kind of cliched moves that we telescope in shorter film that we're all used to seeing now. Yeah. And so I do feel like part of our issue is recognizing two things. One is that when we look at all the other complement of films that have been nominated for Oscars, think about the other black characters in them. Just try to ponder who are the other black characters in these films. That's the issue, is that these maids stand in for, in a sense, all of black America in the context of what's being celebrated by Hollywood. And people just find that offensive, regardless of how good the performances themselves are.
Let me see what looks like Joan from Newtown Square has to say. And Joan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I saw a movie. I loved it. And I looked at it more as a women's perspective of that these women felt empowered towards the end of the movie and felt better about themselves, and that I don't necessarily have to always stay a maid my whole life. There's other things that I can be. So I took it more of like a movie about women and their connections and going above and beyond, you know, what was set in stone really in the South at the time.
Well, Joan, I appreciate the call. And actually, Mark, if I can go back to you, you were saying before we began that the popularity of the film is because white women went to see it.
Yeah, and I actually have a friend who will remain nameless who is a well-known author of novels who got very upset when I criticized it because she's from the South and she had a relationship with a black woman who helped raise her. But as I said to her, as Catherine Stack has been asked, what do you know? Did you ever know what happened to her when she went home, the author of the novel?
Right.
And she said, no, I never really found out about it. I mean, look, at the end of the movie, I don't see Jessica Chastain give Octavia Spencer a huge raise. It wasn't like the economics of that has changed. And oddly enough, I think in the South, a lot of the economics hasn't changed at all. But I don't think that is why your caller loved the movie.
No.
He loved it for something that had at least an attempt of hope for it in a world today which is just seems so angry.
And also this relationship, if you can call it, and we can, you know, look at it from a bunch of different perspectives, John, this relationship between, I mean, it's like Downton Abbey, but it's in Jackson, Mississippi in the 60s.
I wanted to hate Downton Abbey, and I got hooked.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's right.
I can get you help.
You know, I do think the point to be made is, you know, when you look at how the story is told, it is literally through the eyes of the white characters exclusively. Mm-hmm. So you only see the black women insofar as the white women have access to them. And again, that's telling, right? That perspective is powerful. Man, it doesn't say that's a poor story, but what would that film look like if we really did get this backstage access to these women's lives, like Tanya was saying earlier?
I saw something that actually Merle Evers Williams, as she's now called, said about The Help, and she liked it. And she said, look, my mother was the help. I mean, that this, you know, and we even heard from Viola Davis that her family, there were maids in her family that raised white children and cleaned white people's houses, that this also was really true. I guess I'm back to you, John, again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess the point is it's not the only truth, right? So clearly, if it stands in for everything, that become for a lot of people, right. just right. becomes too much of a burden for this one role, this one film to do. And they become skeptical of the fact that it gets the kind of critical acclaim it gets when there's so many other stories sure. that seem to
but
be
But even
well
within
told.
The context of its own screenplay, you know, as a screenwriter, when I watch a movie, I'm always looking at how they do the scenes. Mm. Just the fact that the end of that film, Emma Stone is able to bring her mother around, you know, in that famous scene on the porch where she chases Dallas Bryce Howard. What if that had not happened? Mm-hmm. The screenwriter could have made a very simple adjustment so that Emma Stone would have lost her family had she continued with that book. That would have, however, it would have changed the mood of the, it wouldn't have changed it that much, but it would have had more authenticity to mm-hmm. it, because the truth of the matter is she would have lost her family.
You know, Tanya, as I was preparing the show, I was thinking, why hasn't anyone made a movie about Rosa Parks? I mean, mm-hmm. talk about a story, you know, and I think one that could be really popular and historic and about an extraordinary woman.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, my five-year-old is there a few months ago, they were learning about her. You know, I think that I think it's an amazing story. I think that, to me, there are so many pieces of that time that are incredibly compelling. You know, I think why not someone, you know, make a film about slavery, but make it an action movie? You know, why not make, you know, a movie about Rosa Parks, but, you know, instead of she's a martyr, make it about the complexity of the life that she had to live? What, you know, I'd love to see a movie about... you know, a mother of a daughter who joins the civil rights movement and the mother's mad. You know, why are you stirring things up? I'd love to see that relationship. I mean, I think that it's not only kind of making these movies, but it's also, I think, shifting the perspective. You know, we're so kind of used to the idea of of African Americans as, you know, as either sort of the martyr or the victim. You know, I would love to see a movie, and I would have loved in this movie, you know, again, to sort of shifting the perspective in the end, to me, is really interesting. I would have loved to have seen what happened when Viola Davis goes home. It's just one scene. That's mm-hmm. all. I would have loved to have seen what Minnie does with the $40-something dollars mm-hmm. she gets. It's just one scene. You know, the movie's 2.5 hours long. Chop off, you know, 45 minutes of that and give it to the other characters. Then I think what would have been amazing is that you would have actually expanded your audience. You know, people of color would have gone to see this film and been like, oh, I get something, I get this big piece of it, and I get the other piece. I join with the, you know, white women to see this movie.
Well, we are talking about the movie The Help with Tanya Hamilton and Mark Rosenthal and John L. Jackson Jr., and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Orchestra performs Maurice Ravel's Bolero under Rafael Frubeck de Burgos, plus other Spanish classics. Pepe Romero plays Joaquin Rodrigo's Concierto de Aranjuez. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorg.org. March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Kimmel Center, Bolero and Pepe Romero with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
On the next Fresh Air, the impact of super PACs on the presidential campaign. We talk with Trevor Potter, a former member of the Federal Elections Committee, who advises Stephen Colbert on his super PAC, and James Bopp, the lawyer who initiated the Citizens United case that ended up in the Supreme Court and opened the door to super PACs. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. There's been talk of a brokered Republican convention. What's the difference between that and a deadlocked or contested convention? We'll get a primer. Also, Downton Abbey is over. Long live the Downton Abbey books. We'll review all three. They might sustain us until season three. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. The Academy Awards are Sunday night, and The Help has been nominated for 4 Oscars, for Best Picture, Best Actress, and 2 for Best Supporting Actresses. The performances have essentially received universal praise, but this story about the relationship between black maids and their white female employers in Mississippi in the early 1960s has generated a great deal of discussion, debate, and controversy, and that's what we're talking about today on Radio Times with filmmaker Tonya Hamilton, screenwriter Mark Rosenthal, and anthropologist John L. Jackson Jr. I do want to play one more scene from the film, and Minnie, who plays is one of the maids and is played by Octavia Spencer, also nominated for an Oscar, walks her daughter to the bus stop, and as they walk, she prepares her on the do's and don'ts of working as a maid for white families in Jackson, Mississippi.
You cooking white food? You taste it with a different spoon. You see, you put the tasting spoon back in the pot, might as well throw it all out. Spoon too. And you use the same cup, same fork, same plate every day. And you put it up in the cabinet. You tell that white woman that's where you're going to keep it from now on out. Don't do it and see what happens. Morning, ladies. When you're serving white folks coffee, set it down in front of them. Don't hand it to them, because your hands can't touch. And don't hit on their cheering. White folks like to do their own spanking. Last thing. Come here. Look at me. No sass mouthing. No sass mouthing. I mean it.
She says no sass mouthing. I mean it. And John, it just, you know, I mean, that's about, again, you know, we're pulling it out of context, but nonetheless, there's a powerful lesson in there. Don't touch.
It almost brings me to tears to hear it, right? I mean, there's something about the intimacy of that moment in the context of a brutal South that it's amazing. I think that scene is really well done.
What do you think?
But again, I think we have to look at it in the context of what's going on in the country today. I mean, if you listen to how, for instance, immigration is spoken about, that there, a lot of the country thinks that we're somehow under this onslaught of people who are sneaking into our communities. I mean, it's so preposterous, as what's going on in Arizona, for instance, that I think that the movie does at least suggest of how mad the country was. I mean, just a generation ago, we had bombs blowing up churches, the same way terrorists in Baghdad and Kabul blow up. And a lot of good people stood silently by and didn't do anything about it. And when we see politicians go berserk about the supposed influx of millions and millions of immigrants, a lot of people stay quiet about it. So there is that, you know, political context in which to watch this movie, which is why I think there was an audience for it.
Well, let me just throw something personal in, which is that I moved with my family to Delaware in the late 50s, and I grew up in a segregated town. The schools were segregated. The movie theater was segregated. White people down in the bottom, black people up in the balcony. And there was, the, you know, the section, I'm looking at you, Tonya, a section of town where black people lived and the section of town where white people lived. And this was in my lifetime. And I tell that to people and they say, really? You know, this is an ancient history. I mean, in certain ways, this story does shed some light on that piece of America.
Yeah, I mean, I think
maybe
that
they candy coat it and they do it from a white perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Jamaica, so, you know, I came here when I was a kid, and so I think, you know, for me, my entire sort of sense of what, you know, America as a sort of segregated and kind of a really racially blunt place, because I think we now live in a very racially layered time, but I think that the bluntness of that racism, you know, I think that there are pieces in this film, and I really love that scene. It's one of the scenes that really stood out to me in the film that you played, the clip, and you know, so I think that as someone who is essentially, you know, of sort of foreign roots, I found it really interesting. Anytime I see anything like that, I want to be able to kind of look at the details there, because I think it is really in the details. And that's a moment that felt to me to be really about the small things. You know, I enjoyed hearing that. There's a broadness, I think it's a little bit harder for me to kind of connect to, but I really like the small moments. You know, I think that... I feel like if there is a way that these films, these sort of largely high-profile movies that really reach a lot of people, if there is a way that they can do exactly what that scene does, which is that, you know, it doesn't matter to me kind of what perspective necessarily, if the complexity of the world and the people can resonate, you know, whether it's politically or socially, you know, romantically, anything. But when that's absent, I think what you get is what John is talking about, which is a sort of, you know, kind of very broad and unrealistic and sort of, you know, kind of idea of what people are. And I think that African-American cinema and any cinema of color, I think, really suffers in a way from there not being enough, and not being enough films, but also just not being enough detail.
John, if I can just get you back in, then we'll go back to our callers. But I guess the point I was trying to make is that we don't really know our history. I mean, the KKK was a terrorist organization, but we don't often talk about it in those terms.
And not only that, we seem to always pretend that history is longer ago than it actually is, which was your other point, right? This wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, the other thing that resonates is when I hear parents right now in black urban communities talking to their young children about ways to interface with police officers or the state, in some ways very similarly to the way this character is trying to teach her child to be black in America in the South in that moment. And so I think there is a way in which it's not just the history of the ancient past, it's the history that we're still negotiating, right? Mm-hmm. And that we can't pretend away.
Let me see what April from the Northeast has to say. And April, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi there. I just had a question.
Sure.
And a comment. Can we appreciate art as art, even though there is this historical backdrop? Because after listening to all the reviews, it seems to me that people are just horrified. And it reminds me of the minstrel, the Scottsboro Boys, that my husband and I viewed a couple of weeks ago. People were horrified, but as an art production, it was great.
I saw that as well. And it used minstrelsy to tell the story, which... You know, it was a little disconcerting.
Yes.
Did April, just a quick question. Did you like the movie?
I did, yes.
Okay.
I did like the movie. My major in undergrad was Africana Studies, mm-hmm. so I could actually pick apart what I felt was fiction from nonfiction. And I could actually identify with many of the characters because of my background knowledge.
Oh, well, that's
but people who do not have that background knowledge would not be able to identify with it. So they may view it as just art.
I hear you. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And let me toss that over to you.
I think one of the things that, you know, it's fair to say, though, this was not a movie that came out of bad intentions. It wasn't a movie that was intentionally trying to be mean-spirited. And if you actually look at a lot of the major reviews, you know, that I read through before I came on the Times, the LA Times, San Francisco, Chicago, some of the online things, there was a lot of this catching themselves, like, oh man, really, we're going to see that? But you know, I'm kind of having fun at certain moments of it. So you know, it's more in the context of, for instance, in that scene we talked about, where Octavia Spencer gives her sort of Polonius speech to her daughter. I was sitting there as a screenwriter saying, wow, I want to follow the daughter. That would have been, I was so much more interested to see her story at that moment. I wanted to see what happened on that first day. That would have been great drama. But again, it's, you know, a movie that points up what's not out there more than it is of itself an egregious act.
Well, John, and there's always that tricky thing when it comes to dialect, you know, how people speak in a certain accent. And I wonder, did you respond to that? Was that uncomfortable? Did it feel natural? Did it feel right?
I mean, I felt like it was natural for these characters to speak the way they did. You know, my only issue is that the only thing Hollywood thinks white America can hear when they're listening to black characters, right? Is that the only thing that's authentic to other people? To me, that is authentic, but there are other authentic dialects of African-American linguistic possibility that don't get the same kind of traction in Hollywood.
Who, by the way, were there in that community at the time, writing about what was going on, doing journalism about what was going on. This was not... No one needed Emma Stone to come in and write a book historically at that moment. There were plenty of books being written, plenty of people who were making great speeches. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm thinking of To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, there's some other movies that they're told from the white perspective. I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird, mm-hmm. one of my favorite movies, I have to say. I mean, that goes back several decades. But is that, Tanya, what you see, which is this pattern of, in a sense, white people telling black people's stories?
I mean, I think that... I think, yeah, there's an undeniable history of that. I mean, I think that I can think back to films like Far From Heaven, for instance, which I think is an interesting example because it's a film that I happen to really love, and yet it's the exact same sort of construct. And in fact, I think it's Dennis Haysbert.
Yeah.
Character is
Mr. President, I think.
Right, that's right, from 24, that's right. You know, is sort of given very little screen time. Right. And so it really is kind of this white woman's perspective, and it's her story. And in fact, her husband gets so much more kind of a... you know, we're supposed to be so much more empathetic in a way to his, you know, plight than to Dennis Haysbert. So I think that, you know, yeah, but I think that To Kill a Mockingbird, which I will admit is a film that's very important to me and a book that's very important to me, and I find that I have to put the politics aside and then I can really love this material. But it goes back, I think, to, you know, how... much, for instance, To Kill a Mockingbird as a book and as a film is not only about race, which I think it ultimately gets wrong in the context of its time, but I think it's also about class. And I think that it's a, you know, that to me, because it succeeds on that level, it doesn't in any way sort of excuse the fact that the Tom Robinson character is sort of a caricature in that he's sort of the victimized, you know, sort of African American. But at least it gives me something else to kind of hold on to. And I will say that at least for Tom Robinson, he has a wife. And I never see them together, but he is in so context. He is made whole. Right. In a way that I think in these characters aren't.
Let me see what Charles from Pottstown has to say. And Charles, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I was wondering what these your guest was commenting, comparing this to the movie The Color Purple. And I was thinking, here's a story of black people told by a white man, Steven Spielberg. There was, as far as I remember, there was not one positive black male role model in there. They were all, frankly, disgusting. And I also thought about, one of your guests said how... black actors and actresses are rewarded for playing negative role types. And I think that kind of made the career of both Whoopi Goldberg and Oprah Winfrey for playing negative role types.
Hmm. But we should say it was also based on a book written by an African-American woman. But, John, can I get you to respond to Charles' comments?
I mean, The Color Purple was incredibly controversial when it came mm-hmm. out. And I think in some ways not for completely different reasons than The Help is. I do feel like one of the things we have to recognize, though, is, you know, we're always dealing with issues around these films that are about more, in every instance, about more than what any of the artists intended. And so we don't want to assume that we can make the films do all the work we need them to do every time, but we also have to be held accountable for the ways in which these documents fit into a larger cultural context. Whether or not we agree with the pushback all the time is another issue.
You want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think that, for instance, there's a wonderful BBC America series called Luther.
He's
an incredibly nuanced, fully realized psychological character. It's just that, again, we're in this transition phase right now. A lot of people aren't watching Luther, but it will soon be that all these movies and all these shows will just be little push buttons on your app, on your smartphone, and distribution is going to change. And I think, I'm hopeful that everything about media entertainment is going to get a lot more democratic.
Mm. Well, that's good news, and I recommend Luther as well. Let me see what Khadija from Center City has to say. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just was wondering, I'm wondering what you guys think about the fact that Viola Davis's mom won't watch the film. and what that says about this text being kind of a redemptive tale, maybe for white women as compared to black women, or the fact that it's even still troubling for someone to see their own daughter playing a maid in 2012
or
2011.
And I did not know that, and that's interesting. You're kind of nodding your head pensively there, John. Go ahead.
I mean, I do think this stuff is personal for these actors. I mean, they have to go back into their community. I mean, you want artists to be able to be artists, right? And they've been fighting for that right forever. But these are artists who are also daughters and husbands and members of a community. And folks are going to say, we don't always like the decisions you're making, even though we recognize Hollywood isn't giving you a lot of options, too. And so you're balancing that. And I do think, to me, there's something incredibly tragic, if that's true, that her mother cannot even watch this, you know, potentially Oscar-winning performance.
But is that, and Tanya's almost out of time here, but does that tell us that just how painful it was to be someone's maid?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fact that we're all here and that everyone has sort of weighed in on this film, I mean, there are a lot of movies that I think have been made in the last 2 years that are interesting, compelling, worth talking about, but yeah, I think this one has hit, you know, a chord for a lot of people on all different ends of it. I know people who love this film, who think it's spectacular, and like one of your callers, that there's a redemptive quality to it, and I know people who refuse to watch it. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's a complicated history. I think it's a very raw history. I think that we're all still living through. I think we live in a very racialized time, you know, since Obama came to the White House. And I think people are contending with race and class in ways I think that, you know, we haven't been as open about it for a long time.
And Mark, you get to vote for the Oscars.
Yes, I do.
How do you think the Help is going to do?
I have to say that some wonderful movies that people should look out for, specifically A Separation, which is one of the few times in history that a foreign language film has been nominated for Best Screenplay. It's an astounding movie with everything we've been talking about, and it'll change your view of Iran. And Angelina Jolie's wonderfully powerful movie, In the Land of Blood and Honey, it's like watching Costa Gavras. It's a fantastic film. I think if Angelina Jolie's name was not on it, it would have been taken a lot more seriously. Higher Ground, Vera Farmiga's movie, too.
And if I might add,
very quickly,
Margin Call, Underdog, but I think it's
which got a nomination for Best Screenplay.
For Best Screenplay.
Do you have one, John?
Those are all.
I'm going to throw.
Oh, and Chico and Rita, the animated movie.
Oh, yeah.
Animated Tita Fuentes.
Well, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Also, our thanks to Jonathan Best, who produced this hour of Radio Times, and the show is produced also by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us.